Let's pray, and then we'll get on with Don't Mess With My Sister. Dear Lord, thank you for this morning. Thank you for every person that came out here, God. I pray that we would learn something, that we would be able to focus and just spend time with you. In your name I pray. Amen. I had a drawing practice last night. I announced the title, and I said, "Don't mess with my sister," or "Don't mess with your sister." And everyone looked at me very strange, and it was quite funny, but nevertheless. Okay, Genesis 34, Dinah. All right, Dinah is the daughter of Jacob, and we're going to pick up in verse 1. Now Dinah, the daughter Leah had born to Jacob, went out to visit the women of the land. When Shechem, son of Hamor the Hivite, the ruler of that area, saw her, he took her and he violated her. Now, in the Hebrew, you can't get much more graphic than saying a violent rape. I mean, this is completely, it's as graphic as it can get in the original language. Now, we're going to call this Canaanite love because it's real interesting. He takes her, rapes her, and then all of a sudden in verse 3, his heart was drawn toward Dinah, daughter of Jacob. And he, circle that, loved the girl that he spoke to, and he spoke to her tenderly. So we have her just totally violating her, and then now falling in love with her. Now, if you remember, Leah also had a lot more sons, instead of Rachel, she had two. So Dinah has 8 older brothers. And they are not going to like this at all. They're going to be very mad and very upset. And so we're going to look at today. Verse 4, and Shechem said to his father Hamor, "Get me this girl as my wife." See, he is falling deeply in love with her. And then when Jacob heard that his daughter Dinah had been defiled, his sons were in the fields with his livestock. So he kept quiet about it until they came home. So when they come home, well, they're going to find out, and Jacob knows they're not going to be too happy. Verse 6, then Shechem's father Hamor went out to talk with Jacob. So, okay, now look at that. Shechem's father Hamor went out to talk with Jacob. You have Shechem's father and Dinah's father. And what are they going to talk about? Well, marriage. Now, Jacob's sons had come in from the field. So they come in, they're all hot and sweaty. They've been working out, throwing barley, shifting wheat, whatever they're doing. And they come in, and as soon as they heard what happened, they were filled with grief and fury. Because Shechem had done a disgraceful thing in Israel, his father, Jacob, by lying with Jacob's daughter. A thing that should not be done. So they have fury. Now, look what they do though. It's very strange. But Hamor said to them, "My son, Shechem, his heart is set on your daughter. Please give her to him as his wife. Intermarry with us. Give us your daughters and take our daughters for yourself." So they say, you have a pretty decent sized family. We have a tribe, a village, probably it could have been 40 males and their families. They say, "Come, we'll intermarry, we'll trade land, your livestock becomes our livestock, we become one." It sounds like a pretty good deal. Now, the only problem with this is it would violate God's promise. As a Jewish people, they're supposed to be separated. Yeah?
Doesn't that make Jacob lose all his stock while that's so basically he's just... everything.
Pretty much. They just combine, it's like combined forces. And instead of having like 12 sons, they would just be one big family. So, I mean, but it's a good point. The problem is, Jacob would lose all that. He would lose the son's birthright. The promised Messiah is not going to come from a Hivite. It's supposed to come from a Jewish person, from Israel. So, you're right. He would lose a lot. But he also gained some as well, protection. Verse 10, "You can settle among us and the land is open to you." You gain land. "Live in it, trade in it, and acquire property in it." Then Shechem said to Dinah's father, and brothers, let me find favor in your eyes. You know, I know I violated her, but let me find favor in your eyes, and I'll give you whatever you ask. So he says, do you remember Jacob and Esau? Jacob says, here's some stew. And Esau says, well, here, I'll give you whatever I ask. I'll give you my birthright. Same kind of thing here, sort of. He says, let me find favor, and whatever you want, I'll give it to you. So, make a price for the bride, and the gift that I am to bring is great as you'd like, and I pay whatever you ask of me. Only give the girl as my wife. Now look at this. Verse 13. Because their sister Dinah had been defiled, Jacob's sons replied, underline this, deceitfully. Who is the master trickster? Dr. Laban and Jacob. So they learn from their father. So look at this. Look what they do. They replied deceitfully as they spoke to Shechem and his father Hamor. Well, they said to him, we can't do such a thing. We can't give our sister to a man who's not circumcised. Remember, that's the mark of Israel. That would be a disgrace to us. We will give our consent to you on one condition only. You said you ask anything? Well, here it is. That you become like us and circumcise all your males. So every male in the village, like I said, there'd be probably about 40 males, and every one of them is going to be circumcised, no matter what age. Now, verse 16, then, and only then, basically, we will give you our daughters and take your daughters for ourselves, that means when they're married, and we'll settle among you and become one people with you. But if you will not agree to be circumcised, well, we'll take our sister and we'll go. Now, look at this. I find this interesting. Verse 18. Their proposal seemed good to Hamor and his son Shechem. Well, they're kind of making that judgment for the whole village, you know? All the guys, and I don't know why it seemed good to them, but it did. And verse 19, the young man who was most honored of all his father's household, that's probably Shechem, lost no time in doing what they said because, you remember, he was delighted with Jacob's daughter. First he raped her, and now he's in love with her. Now, verse 20, so Hamor and his son Shechem went to the gate of their city to speak to their, underline this, fellow townsmen. Now, we don't understand this because we're not in this culture, but this would be kind of like a dictatorship. And if Saddam Hussein says, all right, everyone in here be circumcised, all the males, well, they're going to do it. I mean, they have no choice. Either they get circumcised or they're killed. It's the same kind of principle here. They go to the gate of the city and say, all right, guys, here's what we're doing. And if you don't like it, well, tough luck. Same kind of thing here. And they say, these men are friendly toward us, talking about Jacob and his family. Let them live in our land and trade in it. The land has plenty of room for them, and we can marry their daughters, and they can marry ours. Look at this. The men will consent to live with us, and as one people, only on the condition that our males be circumcised, as they themselves are. And he's saying this to try to convince them. Won't their livestock and property, just like Cody said, and all their other animals become ours? So, let us consent to them, and they will settle among us. Then all the men who went out of the city gate agreed with Hamor, forcibly, I think, and his son Shechem, and every male in the city was circumcised. Now, here's the deceit that comes in on the family of Jacob's part. 3 days later, look at this. Look at this. This is the Bible. This is what it says. While all the men were still in pain, two of Jacob's sons, circle these guys, Simeon and Levi. That is very important. Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, took their swords and attacked the unsuspecting city, killing every male. So while they're recovering and out in rehab, the Simeon and Levi take swords and basically attack the city, because all their males, those are the people who defend the village, they go and they kill about 40 guys, probably. And they put Hamor and his son Shechem to the sword, and they took Dinah from Shechem's house, and they left. The sons of Jacob came upon the dead bodies and looted the city where their sister had been defiled. They seized their flocks and herds and donkeys and everything else of theirs in the city and went out in the fields. And they carried off their wealth and the women and children, taking as plunder everything in the house. So, this is going to grab some attention. This is a big thing. They just took out an entire city or village, and they're going to be known throughout the land. And also, it's kind of basically, I don't think anyone else is going to rape Dinah anytime soon. And look at this. Verse 30. Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "You have brought trouble on me by making me a stench to the Canaanites and Perizzites, the people living in this land." This act right here is going to knock those two guys, the two brothers, from receiving the blessing, receiving the line of the promised Messiah. Now, who's the oldest, if you remember? Reuben, right? So Reuben should get the blessing. Well, underneath him is Simeon and Levi, and then you have Judah. Now, Reuben's still in game for the blessing. He can grab the blessing, get all the promise of his family, and then have the Messiah come through him. But just keep in the back of your mind, these two guys are not going to get anything from the Father, because basically, everyone's going to hate Israel, or not hate them, well, yeah, but not like them because they fear them. Now look at this. "We are few in number, and if they join forces against me and attack me, I and my household will be destroyed." He's saying, I know you guys think you're big and bad taking out a village, but if they group together, have an alliance, they could easily wipe us out. Which is true. Verse 31. Look at this. The brothers didn't kill for loot. They didn't kill for anything except because they messed with their sister. "And because they replied, 'Should he have treated our sister like a prostitute?'" Okay, chapter 35. "Then God said to Jacob, 'Go up to Bethel and settle there, and build an altar to the God who appeared to you when you were fleeing your brother Esau. Jacob and his household, and all who are with him, get rid of the foreign gods that you have with you. Purify yourselves, change your clothes.'" Now, do you guys remember a couple weeks ago, or I don't know if y'all may have been in L.A., when Rachel and Jacob, when they fled from Laban, Rachel stole some of Laban's gods and their little mini figures, and Laban comes looking for him because he's mad, and she says, "Well, don't come over here, I'm having my period." And Laban's like, "Whoa, okay." And he takes his leave and he runs out of the tent. Well, possibly, they never got rid of them, and they passed on to their sons. Or it's more likely that their sons picked them up from people like the Hivites and other surrounding areas. So they have these gods still. And Jacob says, okay, we're leaving. He says, "Get rid of your foreign gods that you have with you. Purify yourselves. Change your clothes." Paul, later on, he talks about taking the old garment of sin and your old self off like a cloak. Well, the same kind of thing here. "Then come, let us go up to Bethel, where I will build an altar to God who answered me in the day of my distress and has been with me wherever I've gone." So they gave Jacob all the foreign gods they had and the rings in their ears. Now the rings symbolized slavery. Now obviously that doesn't happen today. When you give a girl a pair of earrings for marriage or your wife something, it's obviously not saying that she's your slave or you have earrings yourself. Well, in this time it meant that basically you were a slave to those gods. The males would wear them as a symbol of slavery. So he says, get rid of them, so they do. And Jacob buried them out under the oak at Shechem. And they set out, and the terror of God fell upon the towns around them so that no one pursued them. Now that's a really important verse because everyone feared this family now, Jacob's family. Because, I mean, wouldn't you be kind of freaked out that they just took out an entire village with using deceit? I mean, that's pretty big, the 12 guys. "Now Jacob and all the people with him came to Luz," that is Bethel, "and the Canaan, in the land of Canaan, and there he built an altar, because he was called the place of El Bethel, and because it was there that God revealed himself to him when he was fleeing from his brother," if you remember that. "Now, Deborah, Rebekah's nurse, died." So she's still trucking around. That's from a from a while back. And she was buried under the oak at Bethel. So it was named Alan Bakuth. And after Jacob returned from Paddan Aram, God appeared to him again and blessed him. Now, your name is Jacob, but you will no longer be called Jacob because your name is Israel. So he named him Israel. That's very important. You have Esau and you have Jacob, two brothers. From Esau come the Edomites, which we will look at in a minute. And from Jacob come the Israelites. It's a little dry, but it's important. Now, God said to him, I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and increase in number. A nation and a community of nations will come from you. And kings, underline that, prophecy of kings, will come from your body. So, he's basically saying, the 12 people, 12 boys you have, kings will come from them. And the land I gave to Abraham and Isaac, I also give to you. And I give you this land and descendants after you. Then God went up from him at that place where he had talked with him. Now Jacob set up a stone pillar, just like his father had, at the place where God had talked with him, and he poured out a drink offering to it, and he poured oil on it. And Jacob called the place where God had talked with him Bethel. Now, remember, we have Rachel. Rachel is the most beloved son of Jacob. How many years did he work for him? Well, 7, y'all remember this. 14, because he worked for him for 7 years, and then Dr. Laban trickster guy, he tricks him, and he makes him work for another 7 years. So 14 years he's worked for this wife. And then, on top of that, he had to work another probably about 10 years with Laban. So he's really, he loves her a lot. And she's going to die here. Verse 16. And they moved on from Bethel. While they were still some distance from Ephrath, Rachel began to give birth and had great difficulty. Now, she only had one son, which is, you guys know this, Joseph, who will become the main character, coming up very shortly. And so now she's giving birth to a second son. Now look at this. This is an interesting, basically a narrative detail. In verse 17, and as she was having great difficulty in childbirth, the midwife said to her, don't be afraid, for you are having a son. Now, we all know the son in that culture was so important. When he says, it's a boy, well, that's great and fine, but what's that really mean? It means that the baby is being born breached. It means, you know, normal babies come out with their head first. Well, he's turned around. And if your mom's been born breached or you were born breached, you know that that's probably very painful because that's not the way it's supposed to come out. But it encourages her, and that's why she's having great difficulty, and she's going to die here in childbirth. Now, as she breathed her last and she was dying, she named her son Ben-Oni. Now, Ben-Oni means son of my sorrows. So, she's dying in childbirth, so son of my sorrows. But his father changed his name and names him Benjamin. Benjamin, which means son of my right hand. Now, that's very key. Son of my right hand. That means when Reuben, the blessing is so important. When Reuben should receive the blessing, well, basically, Reuben's going to kind of get kind of cautious because the son of my right hand, well, that's, is he going to get the blessing? I deserve the blessing. Basically, what Reuben's thinking. Now, we know Simeon and Levi are knocked out. So, Reuben should technically get the blessing. But look what he does. So, Rachel died and was buried on the way to Ephrath, that is Bethlehem. Over her tomb, Jacob set up a pillar. And to this day, the pillar marks Rachel's tomb. So Moses is saying, you guys know where this is. Moses, and back in his time when he's writing this. And you can actually go and you can see where the pillar is. And you can see they have this big, beautiful thing there to this day. And Israel moved on again and pitched his tent in Migdal Adur. Now look at this. This is all it mentions in the Bible. While Israel, which is Jacob, so now you see he's moving into that new name. While he was living in that region, Reuben, the oldest, went in and slept with his father's concubine, Bilhah. And Israel, Jacob, heard of it. Now, why in the world would the son go and sleep with his stepmom? Because, remember, back way back with Noah and Ham and all them, when a son did that, he said, my father is no longer able to control the house. He no longer has power to be responsible enough. So I'm going to take my father's responsibility and take over the household basically. Now, the funny thing is, or not funny, but the ironic thing is Jacob does nothing about it. He will remember it, but he does nothing about it. He remembers it all the way back at the end of Genesis. Now, why did Jacob do nothing about it? Because he was so grieved of Rachel dying. And we'll see that basically he's grieving so much, he grieves for many years, he becomes, basically, God can't use him anymore because he's grieving so much. Now, that right there, that one act, because Jacob remembers it, knocks him out of the blessing. So, you have Reuben getting knocked out of the blessing because he slept with his mom. Simeon and Levi, because they killed a whole village, getting knocked out. And then you have Judah. Now, Judah is going to receive the blessing. The Messiah comes from Judah. But we're going to look at, I think, either next week or the next week, Tamar. I keep talking about Tamar because Judah is going to out-sin both, or all three of those sons. Completely out-sin them all. Yet, he receives the blessing. Why? Because he's going to redeem himself at the very end. And we'll get to that towards the end of the book. Okay. Now we have a genealogy coming up here. And it has the 12 sons. Rachel did have two. And let's see here. We'll come down to here. Now look at this. Verse 27. Jacob came home to his father Isaac. So now he comes back to Isaac. Isaac's still around. Near Kirjath Araba, that is Hebron, where Abraham and Isaac stayed. And Isaac lived 180 years. So Isaac hasn't seen 13 of his grandchildren. 13. You have 12 sons plus daughter, Dinah. And so when he comes, he's going to see the promise, you know, many nations will come from you. Well, there's great promise in that because he has 12 sons. So that's going to be very overwhelming to Isaac, and he'll really like that because, you know, he'll be able to bounce little Benjamin on his knee. And even though Reuben's, you know, sinned, he's still part of the family, and they'll be able to, I don't know, play Monopoly or something. Anyway, verse 29 or 28, Isaac lived 180 years, and then he breathed his last and died and was gathered to his people, old and full of years. I'd say so for 180. And his sons, Esau and Jacob, buried him. Do you guys remember Ishmael and Isaac? They didn't talk to each other until their father's death. And at the father's death, they buried him. Same thing here. Now, Genesis 36. This is the account of Esau, that is Edom. Now, the narrative, Moses puts it in there. He's saying, you guys know the Edomites? They are from Esau. Very important. Esau took his two wives from the women of Canaan. Now, because he did that a couple weeks ago because he wanted to basically slap his mom and dad in the face, marry some heathens. Now, we have a huge genealogy account, and don't worry, I will spare you, and we are not going to read through it, but it's very interesting. We are going to look at why it's important. Why would they have this very lengthy genealogy? Flip over to Obadiah. From Esau comes the Edomites, and from Israel comes the line of Jesus. So the line of Jesus is very important, and we're going to look at the opposite, kind of like the flip side of the coin, Obadiah. Now, it's very hard to find. It took me a very long time. It's towards the end of the Old Testament, and you turn left. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and start reading. Verse 1. This is the vision of Obadiah. Now, y'all will be able to go home to your parents and say, we know all about Obadiah, and we're going to read the entire book of Obadiah. And you can go to your table of contents, and you can check off Obadiah as one book that you studied here. And you'll be so proud that you could finish an entire book of the Bible today. It's very interesting. I had never heard of Obadiah until I studied this. And what it is we have Babylonia. This is in the year 586 BC. Now, why is that important? Because Babylonia has taken Israel captive. I'm setting the background up here. It's about 1,000 years difference between Genesis and Obadiah. See these pages here? Yeah. Lots happened between now and then. But still, the historical facts and the accounting of Genesis is going to carry all the way 1,000 years later to Obadiah. Now, they've just been captured. Israel's just been captured. And basically, the Edomites do nothing about it. Their brothers, because They were brothers way back when. Then they should have done something. And this is God's judgment towards them. Now, we're going to read this. This is what the sovereign Lord says about Edom. That is Esau. We have heard the message from the Lord. An envoy was sent to the nations to say, rise up and let us go against her for battle. See, I will make you small among the nations. Underline this. You will be utterly despised. Why are they being utterly despised? We'll see. Now, this next verse is very important. It's historical, accurate. That's the main point of what we're going to see is the Bible is so accurate. It's great. The pride of your heart has deceived you. You who have lived in the clefts of the rocks and make your home on the heights. How many of y'all seen Indiana Jones, Last Crusade, with Sean Connery? Right. You know, at the end, they're riding on the horses, you know, and they leave that huge fortress-like looking thing in the wall. It's called Petra. This is what it's talking about. This is Petra. If you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. What it is it's a huge fort. Huge fort. And it was in the cliffs, you know, it's like, you know, like sheer valley. Well, it was basically impenetrable. No one could get into it. And it was their pride, you know. And it actually became later the banking capital of the surrounding area. Because, like Fort Knox, if you can't get into it, good place to store money. Same thing here. Huge fort. No one can get into it. Now, look at this. You who say, who can bring me down to the ground? Though you soar like the eagle and make your nest among the stars, from there I will bring you down, declares the Lord. So he says, basically, that's going to fall. If thieves came to you, remember the banking capital? If thieves came to you and robbers in the night, oh, what a disaster awaits you. Would they not steal only as much as they wanted? If grape pickers came to you, would they not leave a few grapes? That's kind of like me, you know. If I have a bowl of grapes in front of me, I kind of eat them until they disappear. But anyway, but how Esau, circle that, Esau, we just learned about Esau, will be ransacked, his hidden treasures pillaged, and your allies will force you to the border, which all this actually comes to pass later on. Your friends will deceive you and overpower you. Those who eat your bread will set up a trap for you, but you will not detect it. In that day, declares the Lord, will I not destroy the wise men of Edom? Here's a good picture of the Edom and Esau. Will I not destroy the wise men of Edom, men of understanding in the mountains of Esau? You warriors, O ten men, you will be terrified, and everyone in Esau's mountains will be cut down in the slaughter. Because of the violence against your brother Jacob, not talking about way back in Genesis, but over the years, how they didn't do anything when Israel was captured, you will be covered with shame and you will be destroyed forever. And on the day that you stood aloof while strangers carried off his wealth and foreigners entered the gates and cast lots for Jerusalem, you were like one of them. You did nothing. You should not look down on your brother in the day of his misfortune, nor rejoice over the people of Judah in the day of their destruction, nor boast so much in the day of their trouble. You should not march through the gates of my people in the day of their disaster, nor look down on them in their calamity in the day of their disaster, nor seize their wealth, and which actually happened. They actually killed some of the refugees. Israel people fled to Edom and they actually killed some. And you should not wait at the crossroads to cut down their fugitives, nor hand over their survivors in the day of trouble. This is so accurate. The day of the Lord is near for all nations. As you have been, it will be done to you. As your deeds will return upon your head, just as you drank on my holy hill, which is Jerusalem, so all the nations will drink continually. They will drink and drink as if they have never been. But on Mount Zion, which is Jerusalem, there will be deliverance. It will be holy. And the house of Jacob will possess in his inheritance. The house of Jacob will be a fire, and the house of Joseph, who we're going to talk about soon, will be a flame. The house of Esau will be stubble, and they will set it on fire and consume it. Like, you know, if you light a fire, you have the hay, and it will just light up and go ablaze. There will be no survivors from the house of Esau. The Lord has spoken. People from the Negev will occupy the mountains of Esau, and people from the foothills will possess the lands of the Philistines. They will occupy the fields of Ephrath and Samaria, and Benjamin will possess Gilead. And the company of the Israelites, exiles who are in Canaan, will possess the land as far as Ziphrath, and the exiles of Jerusalem, or who are in Sepharad, possess the towns of Negev. The deliverers will go up to Mount Zion to govern the mountains of Esau, and the kingdom will be the Lord's. We just read through the entire book of the Bible right there. All right, let's pray. We'll be gone. Lord, thank you so much, God. I thank you that we haven't followed cleverly devised fables and tales and myths, but we followed your word. I pray that we would trust it for what it is, that it's not just some made-up thing, Lord, but it's accurate and it can apply to our lives today, God. And I thank you for this group. I thank you for every person that came out here, God. Bless them in a way that just is new to them, Lord. In your name I pray. Amen.